Yeah, we're starting on Nun Tet. The Chiddush is starting at the very bottom of Nun Zayin Amud Beis. We didn't quite do that part of the Gemara either. And as we're going to see as we roll along, tonight has a number of sugyas in it. That one major sugya, actually, you notice, is a very big Tosa Nun Tet Sim Aleph that has a tremendous amount of very, very contemporary ramifications in Halacha L'Maaseh. So I'm going to try to spend some time in that Tosa. And like that, the Gemaras themselves are exceedingly easy tonight. So we're in for a nice, smooth ride over here, like that, which also means we're going to account for the smooth ride with a smooth atosis over here that takes up the entire Amun and Nun Chet. So let's go. The Gemara says, what then?
Nothing.
I mean, yeah. The Gemara says
that's
like this.
Awesome.
That Nafla Begina Venenes, if the cow, whatever it was, fell into someone's garden and got Tana Mishalemis Mashanenes, so the din in the mission was that the owners only have to pay Mashanenes, they pay a certain minimal modified, the reduced value of what it got hana'a from, basically saying whatever however you evaluate, which we'll talk about, the benefit that the animal derived, you pay for that, you don't actually pay for the hezek. And the idea obviously behind the Mishnah was since the animal fell, it was accidental, that the animal fell. Speaking of an animal, in the middle of who accidentally had his animal fall into something. It's definitely not his fault. He was not for Shaya and the Shmira in the slightest bit, right? So he doesn't have to pay for the damages. He wasn't at fault, but he does have to pay for the benefit that he derived. So the Gemara says like this, starts off with a very very surprising comment. Amar Rav said, B'nechbeta. The only idea that you pay Mashanani is when the animal slammed into the ground. Chavat is a way that comes up a number of times in Bava Kamma. The animal slams into the ground. As Rashi explains what that means is, if the animal basically had its full cushion, when it slammed into the ground, instead of slamming straight on a stone or rock or even dirt to the floor, it happened to fall on some nice cabbage patch, on some tomatoes, on something that cushioned the fall of the animal, and there wasn't such a big slam. So the animal now, just attribute a certain emotion to the animal. The animal is happier, feels better that it did not land smack into the ground. It got cushioned a little bit. You pay for that. What does that mean? As Rashi points out, basically the tomatoes that the animal is using, tomatoes as a mushroom, the tomatoes that the animal fell on are going to get destroyed when the cow falls on a tomato patch or cabbage patch or whatever it might be falling upon. So the owner, the balapara, doesn't pay for the actual value, the damage of those tomatoes or the cabbage, whatever is in that patch, but he does pay this system of mashanenes, the reduced value. Now, the Gemara now immediately points out as a form of a question, okay, as Rashi explains over here, but wait a second. Aval, but, do you mean to imply that achla afilu mashanenes eina mishalemes? Do you mean to imply that if the animal landed on the ground, looked around quickly and started eating the tomatoes that it sees surrounding him, you don't pay for mashanenes at all? That's the implication of Rav's statement. The implication is, you think, which is what we did think, that you pay for the food that the animal ate, the cake, it's not a real hezek, it was an accident, but you got to pay something. Rav comes along and says, no, b'nechbeta. The case is you're only paying for damage caused by the fall, and it's meduyuk that you're not paying for the obvious thing of the food that the animal ate. And we're not really quite sure why that would be true. And the Gemara is going to make a suggestion that's going to get us into a little sticky situation here. Lema rav letamei. So let's say the only way we can think of to explain why you wouldn't pay anything if the animal ate some of that food is based on another svara that Rav has, which the Gemara is going to reject in just a couple of moments. The Omer Rav had a line on Daf Mem Zayin, Hoyolo Shelo Tocha. Rav has a line, a principle. We'll explain what that means. Hoyolo Shelo Tocha. The animal shouldn't have eaten what it ate. And what does that mean? So Rashi explains, he quotes the Gemara for you. That explains like this. Let's read the Rashi inside. Gavi Hichnis Peiros of the Chatzar Chaver Shelo Birashut. In Perek Shor Shinoga Chesapar. Rashi quotes an example of a person who brought his fruit, his Peiros, into his friend's yard without permission. So I basically invaded his property, and I put the sacks of whatever it is, sacks of apples that are there, bags of apples in his yard. It says in the Mishnah over there in Mem Zayin, if the animal of the owner gets damaged on those fruits, and the other guy basically put in without rishus, the halacha is that chayav ba'al ha'peiros, the ba'al ha'peiros, the guy who owns that fruit, who put it in there, has to pay for the damage caused to the ba'al ha'peiros, his animal. What's the pshat behind that? Rav comes along and says, "I'm a Rav, but that's only kishuhuchlukah b'hen shanu." Not halacha is only taught, Rashi explains, if the animal slipped on those payos, is walking around, slipped and got hurt, so then we say, hey, my animal got hurt because your payos are there. They weren't supposed to be there. I didn't even know they were there. The animal wasn't aware that they were there. Boom, it fell on the floor. Your fault, you have to pay. Rav continues, but if the animal ate those apples, it sees a bag of apples, wow, that looks great, it eats them, and the animal becomes diuretic, and it gets sick, and the animal becomes weak, etc. Potter ha-machnis, the person who brought those fruits in, is exempt from paying for the damage caused to that animal. Why? Rav explains, heavy li shalotoka. My animal shouldn't have eaten. In other words, your fruit didn't cause the damage. The animal saw the fruit. It was motivated to eat. That's true. Wouldn't have eaten if it wasn't there. That's 100% true. But the animal has control. The animal ate like a pig, assuming it wasn't a pig. The animal ate like a pig and then got sick. But the animals don't control themselves. They don't. And every time the animal has lunch, does it go nuts and becomes diuretic? It was the animal's basically dumb fault that it got hurt like that. Hoyelo shalotav, it shouldn't have eaten. What does it have to do with our Gemara? So Rashi continues and explains, and here's the tricky swara. Hacha over here. Hacha and I'm over here also. Omer Bala Behema. The Bala Behema, after the animal falls down, can say like this. Well, the Yiridasa, in terms of falling down into the garden, Anusahi, it was accidental. Shehari Nuflet, it fell. Uvachi Lasa, in terms of the animal eating your tomatoes, Hoyolo Shalotoka. Yeah, the animal shouldn't have eaten. I didn't make the animal eat. What could I have done? I was up there on top of the ledge. The animal fell down. Why should the animal be eating the fruit? So the only real svara, even though it should be bothersome to all of us, because it's very difficult to understand what exactly the logic is, but the only svara the Gemara points out is, since Rav held to this idea that the animal has control, the animal doesn't have to eat anything that it sees in front of its face, same thing over here. It's not my fault. What am I paying for? Let the animal not have eaten. Says the Gemara inside, let's jump right to the question. With the five lines up from the bottom. Now, Amri, we say back like this. I don't understand what you're saying. Hochi hashta, how now? What meaning to say, what kind of a comparison is that? Emo do amar Rav hasam, hoyolo shalo tocha. When did Rav say, in that case earlier, let the animal not eat, it's not my fault, that teichod izzikahi, that's when the animal got hurt. The matzi amale mara de peire, the idea was that the owner of the fruit, the damager can say to the guy you got damaged, lo mishalamna, I'm not going to pay you because your animal got hurt. Ho yelo shelo tocha, why would your animal shouldn't have eaten? That's not my problem that the animal ate the food. I'm putter from that. So as an excuse to get off, that's one thing. But lazuke hi achrine. But in the case where the animal is damaging other things, the patre lishlume, to exempt the owner from paying for the animal damage, me, Omar, did Rav ever say such a statement that every time there's hezek, every time there's shame, you can apply that rule. Why should I pay? The animal shouldn't be, not my fault. That's ridiculous, thing about it. That can't be true. Ellis, or rather, the one basically changes around the idea that we said totally, and says, lo mi boy ka Omar. Again, we're going to get into another big sugi here in the Gemara. Lo mi boy ka Omar. The Gemara is giving I don't need to say, a reversal of the idea. Lo mi boy achlo de mishalemes mashenene. I don't even have to bother teaching you that if the animal fell into the garden and it ate the tomatoes, okay, accidentally, but it ate them, that you have to pay for mashenene. The bottom line is, the animal got hana, I wasn't negligent, you don't pay the whole thing. That makes perfect sense, like we thought all along. I don't got to bother with that. What's the chiddush, Rav says, about nechpeto? When the animal slammed into the ground and it had its full cushion, here there's reason to believe that the owner is exempt. What? Ema, we could say like this. Mavriach ari meinichseich aveirohu. Maybe we can tie in a classic svar, and the Gemara comes up a couple of places in Shas. All you did was, Mavriach ari meinichseich aveiro. You chased away a lion from your friend's property. In other words, yeah, you benefited him, but you were basically doing, as Rashi explained, a mitzvah over here. You were doing a nice thing. There was someone's thing about to get damaged. You chased the lion away, the proverbial lion away from his thing. You did a very nice mitzvah, a Shabbat Aveda, whatever you want to call it, to prevent your friend's things from getting damaged. But Mashinanes Nami Lo Mishalim, and because of that, the Gemara says, the owner of the animal shouldn't have to pay you back. Why not? So Rashi again explains what the idea basically is over here, is as follows. Says Rashi, the, you know, let's read one more Rashi inside. Ema, the third Rashi on the top of the page. Ema, hai ba, Ema, why don't we say that? Hai bala sodeh, the owner of the field, was a mavriach ari meinichsei chaveirohu. He was basically, again, as the Masha goes in the Gemara, chasing away a lion from the friend's stuff, meaning to say, shehitzil es behemes chaveiro, I saved my friend's animal, shalonechpato bakarka, didn't slam into the ground and get hurt. I did a very nice mitzvah, mitzvahu da'avat, and all I did was a mitzvah, l'shem shemayim, midei lo lishko, and I shouldn't take anything for that. So why should I have to pay? This guy did a mitzvah, very nice, a chui lost out, but I don't have to pay for his mitzvah. Says the Gemara, Kamash Malon, and that's what Rav is coming along and teaching us, that is not true, that in fact he does deserve the money. I do have to pay him back. The bottom line is his stuff had ended up getting lost. I'm at Mukhuyev to pay the guy back for Mashanenes, despite the fact that he basically passively did a mitzvah, but he gets reimbursed for that. Says the Gemara, why is that true? Ve'ema ha'chanami. Why don't we say, that's right, that's svar. Mavriach ari menichsei chaveiro. Okay, just to translate one more time. To chase away the lion from your friend's stuff and do the mitzvah of saving his property. Why should you get reimbursed for that? Very nice. A mitzvah, that's it. We don't get paid in this world for doing mitzvahs. Why should you get money back for that? So says the Gemara, I'll tell you why. And there's a basic difference over here between a classic example where I see a lion coming to town, I go into guns, start shooting into the air, the lion runs away. If I was to come over there, right, we're just trying to make it make sense to ourselves. If I was to come and knock on the balabais' door and say, you know, your entire flock of sheep was about to get eaten by that lion that was coming to town, I saved you, I want to get paid $100 for my mitzvah. Right, well, why don't I deserve to get paid? It's simple as far as, why not? Huh? Well, there's a chiyuv of Hashavas Aveda. You are supposed to do that. But why don't I get paid for that? First of all, he didn't ask me to do it, right? I'm volunteering over here to go and perform the mitzvah. That's number one. Huh? Well, yeah, it's true with the shayla. Why can't I get my monetary reimbursement? And that's the key word to understand the answer to the question. Why don't I get monetary reimbursement when I did that mitzvah? Because, what does reimbursement mean? So you can repay for something that you lost. What did I lose out of this? I did a mitzvah, right? I decided to do it. He didn't even ask me. So what does he have to pay me for? But says the Gemara, so let's now try to contrast the classic example. What? Hold it for 1 second. Very important point. Hold it for 1 second. So says the Gemara like this. Mavriach ari menichse chaveiro. When you have a guy chasing away the lion from his friend's stuff, meidaito hu. That's done meidaito. The Mavriach Ari decided to get involved, chased the lion away, might have taken up his time, might have in theory lost some time on his job, took a couple of minutes lost, etc. from that. That's true. Hi, but this guy who had someone's animal fall onto his potatoes or tomatoes and cushion the fall, lav mi daito. It wasn't his decision. It's a mitzvah. Who even knows what I wanted to do? So there already, and that's not the same as a mavriach ari. You can't come along and say, you did a mitzvah, get off. I didn't even want to do the mitzvah necessarily. Inami, or else, alternatively, mavriach ari menichsei chaveiro. When you're chasing away the lion from his stuff, let's say pseidu, you're not losing any money. In those cases, you come, you chase the lion away, fine. Hi, but over here, islay pseidu, the person is taking a loss. He had a whole tomato patch over there, cabbage patch that got destroyed. So why should he lose out, on those tomatoes? Because of a mitzvah that he wasn't even planning on doing, he has to get payback for those tomatoes. That's the end of that first piece of Gemara. And that gives rise to a whole massive discussion in the Tosfos, in the Rush in the back of your Gemara. Some of the other Rishonim quote this in a much shorter terms over here, but the Tosfos and the Rush are really the ones who go to town the most and develop some of these ideas about Nichsei Chaveiro of Mavriach Ari. And again, a lot of important things that are going to come out of the Tosfos right now. After this, the Gemara is Mamish of Fly. Okay, so we're going to pause for a couple of minutes to learn through the Tosfos, and we're going to do select-ish chunks inside. At least I'm going to point out to you where the important parts are, where the bigger changes are, and some, what some of the issues are. That are some fascinating things that come out of this that Tosfos here. Start off inside. We're going to read the first couple of lines inside, the first 10 or 12 or 15 lines. Says the Tosfos like this. Im Toma, I have a question over here on this whole principle. You're telling me a rule. Right? Let's just get it down pat. The Mavriach Ari, which again is a buzz way of just saying what? They're not a translation. What's the nimsha? What are we trying to express? Huh? Doing a favor for somebody else. You don't get a reimbursement for a favor you did for somebody else, right? So Tosis asks like this. Okay. So the principle is Mavriach Ari, the Gemara says, it doesn't have to get paid. You know, he's not deserving of any money for that. Your choice, very nice, you don't get money. Tosis asks, but we see in Chazal, that's not true. And a very important Gemara in the Darim Tetzadaf Lamed Gimel. Tosis says like this, Vim Tomer, Hare Poreya Chaveir Chovo, to pay back somebody's debt. Chashvina le mavriach ari bereish ein bein amudar. The Gemara in the beginning of Perek ein bein amudar considers me paying back somebody's debt an act of mavriach ari. The particular case over there, just to get the idea that where Tosfos is coming from, is like this. I have a guy who owes money to whoever it is, right? Reuven owes Shimon money. Classic Jewish name. Reuven owes Shimon money. The only problem is that Shimon has a neder. That's why it's a Masech Nedarim. Has a neder on him. He's not allowed to get any benefit. Is that true? No, 1 second. Excuse me. Reuven owes Shimon money. Reuven and Levi have a deal. A neder that was taken. And Levi is not allowed to give any kind of benefit whatsoever to Reuven. Levi decides he's going to come and pay back Reuven's debt. Doing him a favor. The Gemara says, the Mishnah says over there, in Masechta Nedarim, that Levi is allowed to pay back the debt of the person that's not allowed to get any hana from him. Why is that the case? The Gemara says like this. Because when Levi pays back the debt, what he's really just doing is Mavriach Ari Meinichsei Chaveiro. He's chasing away the debtor over here from the creditor, from the loga. This guy, the other person, have to pay back. Okay, I'm doing a favor. I'm avoiding, right, or allowing him to avoid a problem. By me paying the debt back, the malva is no longer able to come and bother the lover. That's 100% true. But that's mavriach ari. I'm doing a mitzvah on his behalf, not directly giving money. And that's mutter, even though the Reuven's not about to get hana from Levi. Tosis points out, but think about that case. Afagavdi is like Pseida. It's a clear case of me taking a loss. I'm spending money on him, right? And yet the Gemara says that despite that loss, because I don't deserve any reimbursement, etc., and I'm not being mochel any money to him, he's not really benefiting from me in the slightest bit when I go and pay back the loan at all. Tosis says, so what's the deal? That's the case of Pseida, but yet we say that Levi is not owed anything by Shimon. When Levi goes and pays Reuven's debt back. So Tosfos explains basically as follows. Let's read through quickly. The Tosfos explains Mamash a Pashup shot over here within the Gemara, the initial idea that we have to have. The Yesh Lomar, the Hachi Perusha, the way to read our Gemara correctly is not the way we read it before. And this is pretty much agreed upon the order he's shown. What Tosfos says is as follows. Mavriach Ari Minichsei Chaveiro, he's paraphrasing the Gemara, that's Midaito. That's when you made a decision to do that mitzvah. And cave under Midaito, and since you made the decision, Afilu Islei Pseida Kamo Pereya Chovo, even in a case where you lost out, like where you paid back somebody's debt, Chashiv Mavriach Ari, that's going to be considered Mavriach Ari. You decided you want to pay the money. You decided you want to do the mitzvah. That's nice, you took a loss, but you knew what you were doing over there. You don't get paid back. Hi, but in our case, Shalom Midaito, the guy never decided. So it's not fair to say, right? So what? You don't get paid. Inami, or else, the Gemara continues. Now, here's what Tosfos is going to change around a bit in the Gemara. Mavriach Ari Minichsei Chaveiro. In that case, the classic example, Afilu Kishe'eno Midaito. Even in a case where I wasn't choosing to do the mitzvah el chaveiro machricho lavriach ari me edro, in a case where the friend comes and forces me to chase away a lion from his flock, I didn't know what he wanted to do it, but the guy holds a gun to me. Here, you go and scare the lion away. But less sleep say to the mavriach. But in that case, when I'm just chasing lions away, I'm not losing anything. It's not like the case where I'm paying my own money to pay back your debt. I'm not losing. Hi, in our case, it's like say to the guy, he's getting a loss. And here's what Tosfos now gives you the principle of the Gemara. Cave under Ikatarti. Since there's two problems over here. Number one, Shalom Midaito. Number two, Islay Pseida. There's two issues over here. I didn't want to do the mitzvah, it wasn't my choice. Number two, I'm losing money. So therefore, Lo Chashiv Mavriach Ari, it's not considered Mavriach Ari, and I'm deserving reimbursement. Aval midaita, but in a case where there's only one of those factors. If you decided to do the mitzvah yourself, afilu islay pseid, even if you took a loss, or shalom midaita, but islay pseid, or if you have the other flip side, I didn't want to do it, but I didn't take any loss, that's still chashiv mavriach ari, and ain no seno afilu scharu. I don't have to pay any kind of schar at all. And that last line basically means is any kind of payment, any kind of reimbursement. Let's say, for argument's sake, and this is the next big topic that the Tosafot deals with, which I'm going to skip over a little bit. Let's say I had to lose 20 minutes on the job, and I lost the mamish, some of my salary, because of that. No, mavriach ari, I don't have to pay that back. Now, Tosafot quotes, and this is what we don't have time to go through all the examples over here. Tosafot quotes a number of other examples in Shas, where it seems to be when a person decides to do a mitzvah, but he takes a loss in doing the mitzvah, that in fact he is owed money. One easy example, Tosafot quotes from later on in the Masechta, where you see there's some tidal waves coming over there, some rivers overflowing, and I see it's about to sweep away my donkey and my friend's donkey. So the Gemara discusses, in a case where I made a decision, you know what, I'll take the loss, I'll save his thing. And the later on, I want to go back and ask to be reimbursed. You know, I did you a favor, I saved your donkey, can you help me out for mine? Like, can you help me out for mine? The Gemara says, whoa. He doesn't have to pay back for the donkey, but he does have to pay back, any wages that I lost by missing work when I was going and helping him out. So Tosafot says, you see that there are cases where even the mavriach ari, the guy who opts to do a mitzvah, still at least has to get reimbursed for the schar, for the wages, for the time on the job that he had lost, so that he had lost out. And Tosafot basically gives a principle. Again, the principle Tosafot says is like this. Okay, and then he goes off on a tangent. It's really the tangent that's the more, interesting part over here. Not that it's not interesting, but the more relevant part, I guess, let's say, is the tangent. Tosafot says that the final rule is going to be as follows. Okay, and you decided to do a mitzvah for your friend at your own loss. Okay, when it was clear that you were going to lose out by doing that, by doing that mitzvah, okay, I'm on the job, I know that I'm going to miss a half an hour, I see that his donkey is about to get killed if I don't go and do this, right? It's clear that that's what's going to happen. Tosafot says in those circumstances, he has to pay me back for the lost wages, for the lost salary that I got by helping him out. In a case, though, Tosafot says, where the loss wasn't clear, I decided, you know, maybe, let me do him a favor. So that's the principle in our Gemara, when it's not a clear loss. So there we come along and say that you're not deserving of any kind of a reimbursement for your schar, for your wages, for your salary. You decided to do it. It was your choice. Okay, that's the whittical. That's the way it is. You're not going to be getting paid back. Now, with that, once that discussion is there, Tosafot brings, we're now going to be looking a little bit, if you go halfway into the big wide lines over there, towards the middle of that part, Mamish in the middle, you'll see the words, and again, they're in the middle of the line, in the middle of the Tosafot there. Rabbeinu Gershon Pasek B'tshuva Achas. If you see that line, just keep going down. And if Mamish halfway in the middle, towards the bottom of the page, and we quote now a machlokas between the Rabbeinu Gershon Maradola and Rashi, okay? And then the Tosafot over here just gives numerous examples of where these shailas are coming up. If you're interested in medieval Jewish history, okay, and the different areas are floating around in Germany and France, you have a lot of cute stories over here, and you can learn a lot, historically, about the relationships between the Jews and the non-Jews at those times, which is not necessarily our topic in the shir over here, but perhaps for a different time. The Rabbeinu Gershon Maradola gave a psak halacha in the following case. You know, here, why this becomes extremely relevant in a second. He describes an Anos Akum. There was a non-Jewish, basic bully. Okay, a guy who was a gazan, a robber. And he would force things away from the Jews. He was stealing from Jews. And the case was, that Rabbeinu Gershon was speaking about, they threw some Jews out of their homes, okay? And I took over the field and the house and the estate and all that. And there was something that apparently was relatively common when he looked at all the cases that Tosafot brings, the Lamaita case that he talks about as Tosafot goes on. And what happened was, some other Jew with perhaps a little bit more money comes over and buys the house back from the guy. Okay, guy owns the house, and I bribe the guy, buy the house back from the guy. The original owner comes back and says, my fellow Jew, you know that's my house all along. Thank you for doing me the favor of getting my house. I couldn't fight with the guy, some big drunk, a kasuk, whatever it was, pick your favorite anti-Semitic goy from back in the day, and I can't deal with him, a drunken Pole, whatever the classic examples are, dumb Russian, whatever the example, and but now that you got it out of his hands, can I have my house back? I live here, this is my house. The Rabbeinu Gershon Maragol of Paskin, that the person, little down today. Yeah, there is this, yeah. Come on. Blumenblatt.
Yeah.
A very breakthrough psak. And the Rabbeinu Gershom says that when the second Jew buys the house back from the goy, he does not have to give it back for free to the original owner. Why? He said that basically the sugya is over here. Mavriach ari minich techever. I walked in and bought the thing out. I don't have to do the mitzvah for free over here. I had a loss, right? I basically spent my own money on that field. He can pay it back, etc. Once he pays me back, I'll sell it back to him. To give it back for free, says the Rabbeinu Gershom, that he does not have to do. Rashi, the Tosfos brings a long Rashi actually in Masechta Gin. Rashi is one of those Rashi where he goes into the Tosfos mode and just goes on for a little while with a point over there. Rashi apparently, again, what's interesting historically is apparently this is such a normal pressing issue that even Rashi, when he was writing, just had the mamish like to spell out a long piece in Rashi about stories that have nothing to do with the Gemara. Rashi was cholik on that idea, and what worked out from that Rashi in Masechta Gin is that I have to give the house back. I bought the thing back from the non-Jew. I'm a chuyuv to return it free of charge. That's included in the idea of the Mavriach Ari. You got rid of the goy. See, you owe, the person owes the money back. And then Tosfos owes the house back without having to get reimbursed for the quote-unquote mitzvah that he went and did. Tosfos then goes on and begins to discuss examples where you're having Jews who were forced to run away from home at fear of some kind of pogrom. The non-Jews, the local people, were coming in, and there was an expression that was used in Europe, particularly in Eastern Europe, called the Parits, something you might have heard of before. The Parits and the landowners were coming in and taking over the Jewish farms, etc. The lords of the areas were taking the Jews' stuff back. And as the stories went on, a similar kind of issues over here. Another Jew had the option of getting it back. Does he have to return it back to the original owner, etc., etc.? And Tosfos gives a lot of examples where those things come up. He gets into a discussion over here about the rule of Dina de Malchusa Dina. If it was legitimate that the goy took over the estate of the Jew, let's say I had situations where the Jews were getting conscripted into the army. And the rules were, and so again, I'm not sure exactly what all the old French and German laws were. Tosfos apparently feels that there was some kind of a principle floating around back there that the local governors had the right to take over property at certain times. There, Tosfos points out that even if a Jew buys it from him, he doesn't have to return it back to the original person because it was Dina de Malchusa Dina. The guy had a right to take over that land. It's not a stolen property that I have to return. And that goes on and on. And the Tosfos, and again, the rush in the back of the Gemara. All of these things became very, very relevant. And once again, as Jewish history unfortunately tends to repeat itself quite more often than we'd like, all these things came up once again post World War II, post the Churban of Eastern European Jewry, when you had, unfortunately, thousands and millions of people were basically dispersed, kicked out of their homes, forced to leave their areas. The non-Jews all over, right, they were just moving into people's houses, taking people's stuff. And after the war, there were many, many different attempts for either A, people to reclaim houses for a period of time, and then people just really didn't want to be in those countries in the slightest bit. There were exoduses from there, but people started to find their stuff. They started to find whether it was books, whether it was clothes, or sometimes there were Sifrei Torah, there was film, there was just random items that were actually discovered. And there were serious shailas brought to Poskim at that stage in the game. What are the different people's and communities' responsibilities in terms of returning all the stuff that ostensibly had lost and gone for all those years actually was? And all of the tshuvas that are written about them, there are quite a few tshuvas that are there on the subject, are revolving around basically the machlokas, Rashi, the Rabbeinu Gershom, and the Rush that are in the back of the Gemara, and this sugya over here of what do you call it, of Mavriach Ari. And there are a lot of more complicated details that come up, but the basis of a lot of those things. You've heard something, I'm assuming, the claims conferences, etc., where Jews have official lobbies to various governments, particularly the Germans, but to others as well, to get things back, to reclaim sometimes buildings or other items that are there. And that is a mamish issue that's still raging today in all of those various countries that what do you call that are there in terms of the ownership rights, etc., in the various properties and chafatim and metaltalin that have been floating around. Things like that come up, unfortunately, here in Eretz Yisrael as well. There were a number of shaylos that came up in a similar vein after the destruction of Gush Katif back to the Arabs, and things that were taken over, but at other times in the game floated back into the country, like that. And there were certain contemporary Jews that were in about some of these Sifrei Torah and other items that were dug up, quote unquote, afterwards. In Washington Heights, where I used to live, there were shaylos like this that came up. When the Hispanics would steal your tires from your car or your car batteries or other kinds of things, when you walk out in the morning and discover there were pieces missing from your motor vehicle that had been there the day before, and then you had one of these things that someone appear on the street and said, "Hey, you need tires? I have tires. Would you like to buy some tires? I haven't got four tires also right in my back pocket right over here on the street. Would you like to buy your own tires back?" And there were examples of people sometimes would actually buy something that belonged to somebody else, and you have these issues of mavriach harid, to get a battery from the guy over there in Washington Heights, knowing that it comes from your neighbor in one of the YU apartments over there. Sometimes were issues that would come up, and again, these are the basis in terms of the Rishonim for all those different things. Just watch your cars in Washington Heights. Yeah.
So he has to get back to the house.
In other words, if he wants to buy it back. The mashmos is that he's not chayiv to give it back. In other words, even if the guy wants to pay, I can. The assumption that the impression that you get when you read the Rishonim is that there was a certain assumption that Jews are Jews, and if he'll pay him, the guy will give it back. He's not a mean person, but he just didn't want to lose the money for it. You know, the assumption was that they were willing to give it back, he just didn't want to lose from the deal. Interesting side tidbit. I remember once after I bought one of my batteries back from somebody, and we had four Torahs. I remember one morning, Sunday morning, the battery was gone, and so one of these situations, having to buy your own battery back from the guy, and you got to do it because otherwise you can't drive your car. But the battery had been dead as well, like that. I don't know what exactly he did with it, but the battery that was installed was dead. But he actually showed me a very neat trick. So if you're ever in Manhattan, this works. Anyone that today has done this on my own after the Hispanic was. Did you a favor also? There's a lachaser here that like this: if your battery is ever dead in Manhattan, okay, and you put those jumper cables on your battery, okay, because of the subway charges on the ground in the city, you actually don't need another car to start up your car. If you click the other ends of the things on the floor, that your car will your battery will actually recharge just on the asphalt. In other words, you take it, then if you hit it on the thing, I have done this before on my own car. It was taught to me by a reputable person in Washington Heights, and as he said, they do it all the time, etc. And it works, and it has been done. I can bail you out of trouble if you ever need. Now, so is it on the car or on the toes?
No, everything. So if you hold on the principle, Mahriyah Harim in this case, that means that it would be more worth the congregation or more worth the congregation?
Again, Mahriyah Harim in this case is basically telling you did the mitzvah at your own expense, right? So if you're saying you did this at your own expense, right, that's more along the lines of Rashi Shita, right? But you have to give it back. You have to give it back. The Rebbeinu Gershom has a cheshbon, which he describes. Oh, we're not reading everything inside of it. Rebbeinu Gershom has a cheshbon based on all the points that were made in the Tosfos. And you're not mechuyav to take a loss though for that.
Why? Because
the rules of Mavriach, the technical rule of Mavriach Lim Yitzavero doesn't get reimbursed, will not apply in that kind of an example. Because you're not obligated to take a loss, right? And in those cases, it's probably a significant financial loss. You're not chayav to take a loss for doing that mitzvah. Whereas if you follow the way Tosis up until that stage in the game explained Mavriach Harid, right? The rule basically was that if you're excuse me, taking a financial loss, right? You're spending money on something. There's a pseida that's there, and there was a clear damage. If you're not getting involved, the thing is going to go lost. You have rights to be able to get paid back for that. Okay. Again, I skipped over parts of the Tosis, but that's the basis for that psak. And again, it's argued upon. There are other points that come up. The honest truth is, when you're in the base manager, it's not hard to get through the details. There's only going to be a couple of lines here and there that you might not be familiar with the case. I'd be more than glad to help you out. Just to read through the entire thing right now is a little bit, it's going to be overly time-consuming. But as you're going to see, it's not going to take that long to chazal the rest of the Gemara. So it's kedai to try to spend your time going through over here. And if you happen to be interested in halachic history and in Holocaust history, etc., these things are important to know. Understand how the different shailas have come up. There's a very interesting CD printed a couple of years ago by Bar-Ilan University called Shut HaShoah, where they put together a CD-ROM using a computer with thousands and thousands of different references, and again indexed very, very well, of different shailas that came up both during the Holocaust and after on hundreds and hundreds of different topics. And if you're interested in getting like a quick list of like all the different shuvahs that talk about these things, you know, one little click over there is an easy way to access a lot of information. And again, if you're interested, remind me, I'll show it to you a little bit later. Gemara says like this. Let's pick up and just plow through some more of the Gemaras. It says the Gemara, total new topic right now, not related to Mavriach Ari at all. The Gemara asked a question over here that Heichi Nafal. How exactly did this animal fall down into the thing? What caused it to fall? Okay, the Gemara is going to quote a machlokas over here, and it's obviously going to have ramifications in terms of when is the owner of the animal chayiv or pater. So Rav Kahana omer shehuchluka b'meimei ragleha. Rav Kahana says a very big onus, basically, it sounds like. The animal slipped in its urine. Explains Rashi, the animal was walking around up on top, it urinated, it walked in the thing, it slipped, that was an onus, it wasn't supposed to be normal, and the thing ended up rolling down into the garden. Rava Amar Noshe, Dachfasa Chazerta. Simple case, two animals walking around, you're walking your thing, one of them pushes the other off the top. That's also an onus. So Manda Amar Shed Dachfasa Chazerta, the person who says that your putter, when one animal pushed off the other, certainly, in a case where the animal slipped, a crazy onus, unexpected thing, doesn't happen ever, you're going to be putter from paying except for mashenenis. But manda omer shehuchluko b'meimei ragleh. The person who says that the only time you putter is if the animal slips on its own urine, or very far out, very vite kind of an onus. About dachfasa chaverta, but in a case where one animal pushed the other, and that's how it fell, he's going to say that's not an onus. Pasha, the person was negligent. He should have to pay all the damages that the animal caused. The Omar lay, because the garden owner down below can say, you should have walked them past one by one. You're walking up on top of a cliff, on a mountain, wherever it was, by a ledge. Hey, don't let your animals go running around where it's likely one's going to push into the other. That happens if things push each other one at a time. You should have been more careful with the animal. That is called an act of pshia. Now, the Tosis here doesn't discuss it so much, but the Rush in that simon that I was discussing before, and the Rashba also gets into a discussion that there is a Gemara in Bava Metzia that seems to not. If you look at Rabbi Kiva Eger quotes the Tosis in Bava Metzia, talks about it in Daf Sadi Gimel, where the Gemara there is not so into, let's say, this sugya, this concept rather, Riboiloch Avurei Chada Chada. And the Rishonim discuss, is that a real taina, is that not a real taina, etc. Okay, but not for now. But the Gemara over here says, according to one of the opinions, the owner of the garden has a right to say, you should have been more careful, that's called a pshia on your part. Okay. Omer of Kana says now another halacha. Lo shanu el ba'osa aruga. The halacha that you pay only for what the animal benefited, not for the real damages, only in the very same row that the animal fell down onto. About me aruga li aruga, but if it goes from one row in that garden, one row in that field of potatoes, and it eats the potatoes here, and it goes and eats the next thing, and it goes and eats the next, so they are mishalemis mashe zika, they have to pay, ready from the second row and on, for all of the damages. Basically, once it starts moving to something else, that's a new field, it's clearly not such as an accident anymore. When it falls down again, the pashut understanding of Kana is, it fell into that field, right? It's in shock, it doesn't know where it is, what just happened, how did it end up here? Hey, tomatoes, I like tomatoes, and it grabs the tomatoes. So that's all part of the onus. The thing doesn't know what's going on. Once it says, hey, tomatoes, a lot of tomatoes, I like tomatoes, and starts walking around and eating, that's shame. That's the animal that's going and being a magic. Rabbi Yochanan Amar, what do you mean? Afilu me aruga li aruga, afilu kol yom kulo, from row to row, even all day long, if the animal's walking around, But let's understand what Rabbi Yochanan is pointing out. It ended up there by accident. Right? It was an onus. It fell into the garden. The owner didn't want it to go there. The owner standing up on top, watching what's going on, saying, "What do you? I'm supposed to jump off a cliff right now? Jump off the hill to get into that thing to stop my animal? That's like cool. What am I supposed to do?" So until, as we're about to see, when he starts to have to pay real money. But as long as there's an onus, it doesn't matter if the animal's walking around eating other things. There's an onus over here. And until the following scenario, shetetzi, if the animal left the field that it fell into, the tachzor ladas, and returned. Now this phrase means it returns with the knowledge of the owner. In other words, if the owner, as Rashi explains, shelo na'o b'fanei karoi, if the owner was negligent, okay, the animal left the field. And I call Shkav Betsy for coming out of the field. Good to have you back. He takes it back home and doesn't really lock it up. He's posheya in the shmira. The animal gets out and walks back into the field and starts eating. Okay, that's a classic act of shame. I'm a mazik. I was negligent guarding the animal. I have to pay. But the Gemara now qualifies that a little bit, because the truth of the matter is that sounds pretty obvious. Obviously, if you took your animal out of the thing and you're negligent, the animal escapes, you have to pay. So the Rebbe explains what the chiddush over here, lahalacha, is. Amar Papa lo tema, don't say that what he meant to say is ashetetze ladas, that it has to be that the animal left the field with the knowledge of the owner. The owner knows the animal's out. The tachzor ladas, and it went back in with the animal knowing, again, like Rashi explained a second ago, where the owner is negligent and he didn't lock the thing in. No. That's pashit. Elakevan shiyotzes ladas. The chiddush is that once the animal left with the knowledge of the owner, the owner knows that the animal is gone out of the field, he can reclaim it. Afa pisha chazra shalom ladas. Even if the animal returned shalom ladas without his knowledge. Now we're going to see a machlokas over here in a minute between the Rashi Rashba versus the Ravid. Let's just go to Rashi's pshat first. Rashi says is what that means is, even if returned shalom ladas, look in Rashi, hashta, at that stage in the game, once it left the field, after the initial fall, lo sagi le b'shmira pichusa. Rashi says a very interesting chiddush. It is not enough to do an average shmira. In other words, shalom ladas means, very nice, you locked your animal up, you locked it the same way you would have done with all your other animals. Doesn't matter over here, it got out, it damaged, you have to pay. Even shalom ladas, without my knowledge, I tried to stop it, I still have to pay. Why? My time up. The Omer Lay, we say to him like this, well, Kaven di Yalfa, since the animal has learned how to escape, get into that field, it liked that field, it was enjoying its little foray into that cabbage patch. So Kol Emos di Mishtamta, any time it escapes, Lahosam Riyata, it's going to run to over there. And what Rashi, and again, the Rashba quotes this idea as well over here, says is, what that means to say is a tremendous, tremendous chumrah on the owner of the animal. You got your animal back out of that field the first time. But now, that animal is branded as an animal that's problematic. That's the problem child. That animal is going to cause problems in class. That animal is going to break out. That animal wants to get back to those tomatoes that it loves so dearly. And you can't do a regular shmira pechusa. You got a mamish, lock it behind the metal bulletproof door or something like that. Keep that animal safe and sound out of the way. And if any hazard happens from that animal in that field, even with a shmira, your chayiv to pay. Now, the Rashba was not so fond of that understanding that Rashi has over here. The Rashba is a little bit bothered. He says, if that's the case, how far do you take that svara that it's not good enough to do a shmir? He says, for example, let's say, and he asks rhetorically, there's no difference between this case that Rashi says and the following case, which sounds absurd. The Rashba says, let's say like this. You have a regular classic shame, okay? I had my animals walk with my animals, so I'm like, yeah, fine, I was a little negligent, okay? And my animal walked away and was eating something from his field. Shane, I'm chayiv to pay nezek shalom, okay? Why can we say now at that stage in the game, forever and ever, now that you know that animal took a liking to that guy's cabbage patch, that you have to do a shmira ma'ula on your animal because you're afraid it's always going to run back to that place where it once ate and once enjoyed itself. Well, why is that any different than the case over here? So explains the Rashba, it doesn't make sense. We know that the halacha is always, when it comes to shame like that, you do a shmira pechusa, you're positive. You did a basic shmira, you're exempt. We don't find in regular cases that once the animal is mazik once, for the rest of its life, you mamish have to lock it up and hold the gun to its head to watch out in a super duper way. So why over here are we coming up with a chumrah? Oh, the animal fell into a cabbage patch once, ate a little bit, now you got to lock it up and be super careful. Rashi says it's not true. Any regular shmira is good enough. Your animal, going back over the case again, and let's explain the Rashi shita. Your animal fell into the thing, ba'onis. It got up, it was eating, very nice, it's all in onus. Good. Okay, you punt it from paying except for mashinani. The animal leaves, you get it back. You retrieve the animal, it's yours once again. You put it back at home, you're allowed to do a shmira pechus. It's no different than any other animal out there in the world in terms of rechiv of shmira. The only thing is, this is the explanation of the Ravid now that the Rashi is quoting for the last line of the Gemara. The only thing is as follows. If you are ever outside with that animal, and you're walking down the block where the animal happened, the same block where that field was, okay? And the animal's walking past. And you know that that animal enjoyed its stay in the cabbage patch before. So now that you're walking the animal past the place that it was having a good time, you got to make sure that that animal is not going to get inspired, reminded, turned on once again by that field and go berserk and go in there. And if your animal, when you're walking by, even though you're doing the same thing that you would do with any other animal, it's tied to a chain or a leash, whatever it is, and you're walking, if the animal breaks away from you and goes and eats, you're chayv to pay. I, with all my other cows, I was walking there holding the same leash. I'm not chayv to pay for them. I was holding a leash. I'm doing a shmira. That doesn't matter. If you're in the area, if you're right by that thing already, then you have to be very careful with the animal because you're afraid that it's going to trigger a memory, trigger some involuntary response. Now you're chayv to be extra specially careful. But in general, that's not true. If you put the animal back at home and it's living its normal life, a regular shmir is going to be sufficient, and that's the way that most of the Rishonim end up understanding the last line of the Gemara, not like the pshat over here of the Rashi. Okay, we're good with that? Yeah, vayda. Says the Gemara like this. We'll go up into the one of the last pieces. We'll see exactly how far we go. Yorga kedarka vehizika. The rule was if the animal goes down into the field by itself and does damage, mishalemis, mashaydiki, you pay for straight up for the hezek. The real point, obviously, the chiddush of that line in the mission was, the next line in the mission was going to explain how to evaluate hezek, and now we're going to come to, the truth, we'll probably do it a little bit tonight also. The Gemara starts over the question, very, very simple, Shaila. Boy, Rabbi Yirmiyah asks, Yordah kedarka vehezika, b'mei leida, mahu. What happens if the animal goes down like normal, right? Went in. I saw it went down. It didn't fall. There was a pshia on my part. The animal went into the thing. I wasn't watching it careful enough. The damage, though, that occurred was not because the animal trampled. It wasn't regular, and it wasn't shame. The animal gave birth in the middle of another guy's field. The may laser, the birthing waters. The waters broke. There's a big mess over there. The baby's coming out. And this guy has 30 tomatoes that get messed up because of the animal giving birth in the middle of his field. What's the halacha there? In other words, it basically was an accident. The animal gave birth. Whoa, so where'd that come from? So explains the Gemara, there are two sides of the coin. Aliba demanda amar tchilaso b'pshia b'sofa ba'ones chayav. According to the opinion we've discussed before, that if you start off with negligence, but in the end the actual damage occurred by accident, it really wasn't your fault, that you're still chayav to pay. Loti boilach, I'm not even asking the question. It's obvious, according to him, what's going to be the din when the animal walked in, escaped, but then just gives birth in the field. Halach is going to be that he's going to be chayiv to pay. Tchilaso pshia, so bavonis you pay. Giti boilach, what am I asking you? Aliba demanda ama tchilaso pshia, so bavonis potter. According to the opinion that says, when an accident happens in the end, that you're exempt, what's the story here? Mi Arminin, will we say that Keva de Tchilaso b'pshia v'sofa ba'ones is potter? Bottom line is classic case. The end, there was an accident, you didn't realize the animal was going to give birth. Okay, you're off the hook. O Dilma, perhaps. Hacha over here, kula b'pshiyahu. It's one big act of negligence. Keva de Kachazi, de Kreva lola mela. Since you see that the animal is close to giving birth, but it doesn't, animals are like people, they get big and fat, you know it's pregnant, that you know that at any moment now, the animal, any day, whatever, is going to give birth. So you should have watched it. Ooh, as the Gemara says on top of the next page, you should have been careful, you should have been careful more with that animal. Says the Gemara, Teiku, yeah, I don't know. Good question. Do we call that a tshia? Do we call that an onus? Not really clear what to do. Not really clear what to do. Now, the next piece of Gemara says, we're not going to get that much further because I don't want to get, there's a complicated sugya coming up in a minute that I don't want to get us into right now. We're going to do another 5 or 6 or 7 or 8 or whatever it is line, and then we're going to stop at the before the tricky piece. When a thing is birth, people or animals, okay? The baby is sitting in a sack of fluid inside the womb, right? In order for the baby to come out, that sack breaks, and out of the mother splashes a lot of water. Okay, that's what happens to anyone who gives birth. It's a big, big mess, okay? As the birthing process goes on, there's blood and there's guts and there's all that. Giving birth is a horrible process to be there. If you're near someone or someone giving birth, they're going to get very, very dirty. Okay, they're in a lot of pain. You're going to get dirty. Okay, it's worse for them. But here you have an animal inside someone's field, and the animal is giving birth, and the water's flying out of the animal, dirtying the things. There's blood, there's this and that. Eventually, baby pops out, and flaps on the thing, and it causes that. Plain and simple. That's what happens at any time someone gives birth. Everything gets all messy. Meaning what amnesic is it, or what happens physically?
But what is damaging?
What is doing the damage?
What is doing damage?
The water, the blood, the membranes, any of the stuff.
Not the animal itself, not the new animal, not the baby.
It could be if the baby falls on the floor, it could be it'll do damage also. A lot of stuff can go on over here.
So how could the baby
shear? What was that?
How could the baby shear?
Because I'm the one who let the animal go into his field. Right? And the end of Shia would be that if you got an animal that's about to give birth, you shouldn't be letting them walk around wherever it is. Maybe you should just keep it in the, what do you call it? I don't know, in the nursery ward somewhere. Let it be giving birth safe and sound in some nice little room, and don't be walking around outside with the animal. Yeah.
If it fell,
and
it's like down
a cliff,
and then gave birth.
That is one big onus. That there's no problem with. In that case, you wouldn't even pay mashenene. That would be a total patur. If the animal didn't eat, just gave birth and dirty the stuff, it ended up there ba'ones, right?
It was from on the
if you have that situation by nechbata, like that kind of thing, it'll land on a padding. So you're right. If the animal just fell into someone, didn't have that benefit, right, of getting cushioned, right, and it gave birth on something in the short or the fruit, so I'm just totally puzzled. Okay, the Gemara says like this: Case of Mishalem is Masha Hiziko. How do we determine what the hezek was that the animal, that the owner of the animal is going to have to pay for? What exactly is the din over there? So, if you remember that the Mishnah pointed out a system, and again, we're going to get into a lot of details about this tomorrow night. But the Mishnah pointed out a system that you do not actually, at least according to the Tanakhama, you don't actually determine the real value of the individual thing that he damaged, but you look at the things that he damaged as part of the whole, as part of the whole field, and you say, how much was this field worth originally, how much is it worth without those couple of tomatoes, and you pay the difference. It was significantly less than the actual value of the things themselves. So the Gemara says, Menon and Emilia, how do I know that you use that kind of a system? Why don't you just pay for the tomatoes that it ate? Well, why do you look at the field and how much less is it worth now? The Omer of Masna, when Masna explains the Omer Krokas, the Torah says, Ubi'er bisdei acher, it consumed in another's field. Melamed, but that line, bisdei acher, in another field, teaches us, Sheshomin algav sidei acher. What we learn from that word is that you evaluate in, along with the field. Bit today achir. You take the field and you make your evaluations within, about that field. Ask the Gemara, that's not true. Hai ubir bis de achir. That pasuk is teaching me, mitboilei, that's necessary, lafuke reshus harabim. That's coming to exclude classic halacha, a reshus harabim. If the animal was beer in a reshus harabim, it consumed, it ate, it did shame in a public place, halacha is, as we know, shame of reshus harabim is going to be, this one we all know, hopefully, shame of reshus harabim is going to be potter. Where do we learn that from? What's the only time that you pay for shame? When it's this day, acher, some other guy's field. So says the Gemara, no, that's true, you learn that from there, but you can also learn this new drasha. Because in Cain, if all we were learning was that it had to be in the other, in the Nizek Rishus, Lichtov Rachmana Ubiyer Bisdei Chaveiro. It could have said the animal consumed in its friend's field. Inami Sidei Acher. It could have said the animal consumed of a field of another. My bit Sidei Acher. What does it mean when it uses the really improper phrase in another guy's field? Sheshamin Agav Sidei Acher. What that teaches me is our halacha that you make the evaluation in relation to the larger field that's there. Ask the Gemara Ve'ema Kulei Lahachi Uda'asa. Maybe the entire pasuk is only teaching me the halacha about estimating in relation to the larger field and lafuke rishus harabim minolad. How in fact do I know that, a pasuk from Shem rishus harabim, maybe this pasuk of this day acher is only teaching me the rules of Shuma, to evaluate the damage. So in Cain, the Gemara says like this, if that would be true, lechtevei rachmana gabi tashlumin. If the only point of the pasuk was to teach me how to determine how much to pay, the Torah would have written in the phrase "b'sdei achir" in the parsha that speaks about paying back. For example, "meitav sadeyu u'meitav karmo yishalim b'sdei achir." What it would have said was, "You pay back the best of your field in a vineyard b'sdei achir in conjunction with, in relation to another field." But lamali de katsvei rachmana gabe ubiyah. Why does the Torah use the word in another person's field in this day achir when it speaks about the damage that's getting done? The truth is that's really the wrong context. That if we're speaking about payment, you write that line in the pasuk, and the phrase of the pasuk speaks about payment, not in the phrase of the pasuk that speaks about where you're doing the damage. Therefore, shmat mina tarti. Those are the final words of the Gemara. Therefore, able to see and derive both points out of that pasuk. It's obviously teaching me something about the damages. That's why you think that pasuk. What's it teaching me about damage? You're only chayiv if you damage in the Rishus HaNizik, not Rishus HaRabim. But the extra days, the day acher is there to come along and teach me that we evaluate the damages and only pay back in relation to the larger whole of the field. Now again, tomorrow night, like I said before, the Gemara is going to get into some tricky calculations about how to end up actually paying. But in terms of tonight, that is the basics over here. And once again, you are...